This episode of Mining Stock Daily is brought to you by Roskin Gold. Roskin is a West African-focused exploration company, currently active with its Kandioli project in West Mali. The latest updates can be found at roskin.ca.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome back into Mining Stock Daily. Trevor Hall here with your post-market commentary. Not necessarily post. We still got less than an hour left of trading here at recording. Just a quick moment of caution. Jamie Keach is back here with us, so what you hear may not be suitable for young ears. It's been known to happen. Some F-bombs, some four-letter choice words. Jamie, it's a pleasure to have you back on.
Caution, Trevor. I feel like I'm being unfairly characterized here. I assumed your listeners actually only listen to this show for the rare occasions that I come on here to swear.
It could be true. It could be true. So I hope they come in and like want some information and some news out of the metals and mining sector as well. But, you know, we'll take it. So come on in, everybody. A quick look at the metals here real fast. Gold currently trading just under that $1,800 mark on the futures basis. It definitely had a nice bounce off of its lows of the day. Silver had a nice bounce off its lows today, but it's still not able to get back up to that $28 level that we wrote about this morning in the news briefing. James, let's talk to you about this continued move in silver. It's been a pretty healthy move despite kind of the frenzy of the silver squeeze in the last couple of weeks. Are you at all encouraged about what you're seeing in the trading activity with the devil's metal?
Devil's metal? Is silver the devil's metal?
That's what I heard today.
I've never actually heard that expression before.
I like it though.
Yeah, it's mysterious, I suppose. So, you know, I'm actually, as we're talking, I'm kind of just pulling up my silver chart now. And there's, you know, silver is kind of this very divisive metal, it seems to me. People, maybe that's why they call it the devil's metal, because it seems to elicit a lot of emotions from people. Either they tend to love it and believe it is the, you know, the be all end all, or they tend to hate it. And there's lots of chatter on the internet from both ends about why it is the best investment anyone can make or why it is the worst investment anyone can make. And, you know, I would say I fall somewhere safely in the middle. You know, we've seen silver rise considerably. What was its lows a couple of years ago? Like $12-$14? That was not that long ago, right? So that was, I want to say, 2018, 2017 when that was happening. And so over the last 3 years, you know, we've seen this thing more than double. So that's exciting. A lot of people have made money in silver. You know, when you get a commodity that doubles, you know, think about how many products in the world actually get their product price that doubles. Imagine Apple could just charge twice as much for iPhones all of a sudden. You know, they're already one of the most successful companies in the world. Imagine you could just double sort of income like that. So when silver doubles, obviously a lot of companies that were not profitable or were marginally profitable kind of become extremely profitable. But, you know, what is, I would say, particularly interesting about silver compared to some of its competitors right now, you know, you have gold, which traded above all-time highs, I guess, last year, and it's still trading, you know, only a few percent off of sort of the 1930 high, sort of $1,930 high, I should say, not 1930 the year that we saw, you know, a few years back. What you're seeing in copper, I mean, copper's moving so damn fast. You know, people can't see me. I'm looking at my phone to check. It's almost 420 right now on crypto.
So smoke it if you got it, folks.
Copper is pushing up on all-time highs right now, right? Rhodium is like $22,000 an ounce, which is like unbelievable to even wrap your mind around. Yet silver is still at 50% of basically all-time highs, right? You know, $50 is kind of the benchmark for that. So when you see other precious metals, when you see base metals, and silver can fall into the category of a precious metal or an industrial metal, hitting all-time highs right now, that makes me think pretty confidently that silver has a long way to run. I don't necessarily fall into the camp of people that are 100% certain silver is going to $100 and, you know, it's, you know, they're going to be the greatest thing ever. But should it be $50 in the next 3 years? I would think so. I would think so. And that to me seems like a very, very safe, prudent assumption, given what's going on in the world right now and given how I would say its peers are reacting. So that's where I sit on silver. I'm excited. Frankly, I don't really care if it's $27 an ounce or $28 an ounce. That doesn't really impact my decision. I'm waiting for it to go to $35 an ounce or $40 an ounce, which I don't think is that far down the road.
Yeah, I'm with you, man. I couldn't agree more. I do want to ask, because we haven't had you on the show since the news was announced, but you are now a partner at Inventa Capital?
I am, yes. So
congratulations. Yes, congratulations. Thank you. Tell us about this new endeavor.
So Inventa Capital is a partnership between myself, a gentleman named Michael Connert, who is the CEO of Vizsla Silver, so obviously a silver explorer, and Craig Parry, who is a geologist, and he is an executive and board member of many different companies, including Vizsla, including Skeena, including ISO Energy, and several others that he's involved in. And, you know, the Inventa premise is very, very simple. We gathered a few like-minded partners and a great team that we've built out here to go out and try to launch the next generation of great mining and natural resource companies. And the way we style ourselves to work is as a venture capital firm. So we're going out and looking for new early stage pre-IPO deals. You know, these are private assets that we can add value to. And so there's several ways that goes about, but you know, it means the ability to invest our own money in this and get things going, the ability to help find and develop great management teams, the ability to attract capital from other sources to get things off the ground, to lend technical expertise, and all these things that you need to really launch a new mining exploration company, all these things that we love to invest in. You know, all of us come from a variety of backgrounds. You know, Craig is a geologist by training. He's worked all over the world. He's been involved in many successful companies. He's been involved in helping build literally multi-billion dollar hedge funds. I'm a mining engineer by training. Trevor, you know, and maybe some of your listeners know a little bit about me. I worked for big consulting firms like Hatch in Canada and a company called Layton in the United States, big mining contractors building mines throughout Asia and North America. And then most recently, I worked at Equinox Gold in the buildup. And then again, I've launched this newsletter, the Resource Insider newsletter, where we go and look to invest in great deals. And then you have Mike Connert, who comes from an investor relations background, an entrepreneurial background, and has started and launched and sold mining companies. So it's been a really cool, really fun sort of meeting of minds there. And we have a very similar, I guess I would say we have a similar ethos and view on how these things should be created and how value can be really created in this space. And, you know, we got a lot of deals in the works, and I'm hoping we're going to be able to talk about a few more of them soon.
Can you tell me more about how you plan on balancing this new endeavor with Inventa Capital while also providing the Resource Insider opportunities?
Yeah, so that is actually a very good question. And it's a question we spent a lot of time addressing and talking to about our members before I actually made this move, because, you know, it's life is all about managing conflicts in a way and making sure you very clearly communicate what you're doing, why you're doing it, and, you know, the impacts of that. And I was very careful to address this when to our paying members of the newsletter, because we have hundreds of people that buy our newsletter. They expect a certain level and quality of service, and it's my top priority to deliver that. And that's my day job. I still, you know, I'm running the newsletter. I'm spending all day, every day, really focused on that. But what my job at the newsletter actually consists of, for the most part, is research. So, you know, everyone gets to see me talk shit on podcasts and do all this stuff, and that's the fun
part.
There
it is.
but this is actually, you know, this is, I love doing this stuff and talking to you and guys like you, and I have my own podcast. You know, which I would say is, you know, far superior to any of these, but, you know, but the opinions vary on that.
Contentious statement.
But you know, that's kind of the fun part. That's actually a very small part. Most of my job is with, you know, researching companies, meeting with management teams, doing our sort of technical and financial due diligence. And Resource Insider's sweet spot is investing in companies that are either listed or soon to be listed, have very competent management teams in place, have a path to going public, have probably already raised some money so far, and they've gotten the ball rolling. And what I found over the last 3 years of doing this is that there are some really cool, really high potential opportunities that came across my desk that I didn't have. The company wasn't at a stage yet where we were able to confidently invest, and I didn't have the bandwidth or the resources or the team behind me to help get it to that stage. And the best example of this company or of this happening is a company, a gentleman who, you know, will remain anonymous at this point. He reached out to me. He had a really great asset in Mexico, really, you know, old workings, near infrastructure, mills on site. And I went back and forth and talked to him a few times, and I reviewed the documentation. I said, you know, this is really cool, but, you know, reach out to me when you got a management team and a company set up and everything going forward, because it's not really what Resource Insider's designed to do. This is too early for us. Well, skip ahead, I want to say somewhere between like 6 to 12 months in that range, that company became Vizsla Resources. So he approached Mike Connert after that, who saw the potential there, was looking to go out and build companies. He'd already started Vizsla, which was a small company. It had some cash in the bank. They were looking for great projects. And, you know, kind of the rest is history. You know, Vizsla was has hit over $200 million. I think they're trading at around $150 million market cap now. So if I had been set up properly with Inventa Capital at that point and had the newsletter, I could have been able to approach that like, bam, on day one. Instead of investing at 40 cents, we could have been investing at 5 cents or 10 cents or 20 cents. You know, instead of making a, I don't know, 5-6 times return, we could have made a 10 or 20 time return. So Inventa Capital is designed to capture a stage of projects that Resource Insider is just strictly not well suited for. It's so that I can get exposure to it. And it's so frankly, so that our members can get exposure to it too. That's how these things look together. Or rather work together well. And my actual day-to-day job is pretty similar, but it's some things will fall into the Inventa pile and some things will fall into the Resource Insider pile. And it really depends on which stage these companies and assets and teams are at.
So I'm assuming you'll definitely be very transparent as, you know, maybe a new opportunity that comes in through the newsletter that is also backed by Inventa, you're going to have to clearly state.
Yeah, of course. There's, you know, we always,
there's bias here.
Yeah. So, well, let me tell you how we do it already. So, you know, I think we're averaging 8.6 deals a year, and I think we'll probably be closer to 10 or 12 this year. I think to date, and I got to double check this, but we've done about 22 deals since we founded Resource Insider. And I want to say two or three of them I have owned share positions in before we brought to Resource Insider. Now, a couple of them where I owned share positions in these deals before I even started Resource Insider, and the company was private and they've been private. So the example of this I'm using is Knorrland. So Knorrland, I invested in because my two buddies were starting a company years ago when they were working out of their living rooms, and I put a little bit of money in, which was a lot of money for me at the time, actually. And then 5 years later, they went public and we brought it to Resource Insider. And I disclosed and said, look at guys, I invested at this price at this time for these reasons. And, you know, Resource Insider didn't even exist. Another one I had invested in, I want to say 8 months earlier, but it was at a time where I couldn't in good conscience bring it to Resource Insider. They didn't even have an asset yet. It was just a bunch of guys that were like, had a plan and an idea, and they were going out to get everything. The point I'm trying to make, though, of this is that I disclosed that to our members in advance when I brought it to them. So everyone knew that I was already a shareholder. Everyone knew what price I got in. And I continued to invest. I invested again in the same rounds as my members. So our goal is to invest alongside our members. We invest in every deal. We bring them at the same terms as our members. In the event that I already own the stock, and that will be the case with Inventa. So, you know, I'm a capitalist. I'm not doing this for free. It's a shitload of work to put these deals together, and it's been a lot of late nights and a lot of stress. And I want to get compensated for that. And most of my compensation is access to, access to financings and the ability to invest early. So I hope that we'll be able to bring 2, maybe 3 deals like that to our members every year. In the event that we do, I'm going to be fully disclosing, you know, that I am a shareholder of this and that I've been in it for a while, and that there is, by the very nature of that, a conflict there. But this is going to make up a very, very small portion of the deals we do bring members, and they can participate, they cannot participate. It's, of course, always at their discretion. And frankly, you know, we're putting together deals that we think are going to make money. You know, I'm putting, you know, frankly, a lot of my own money into these things. And going in earlier, one of the downsides to that is, you know, if you are investing at an early, cheaper round, your shares often get locked up. So sometimes the stock is locked up for 18 months, 2 years, 3 years, depending on how it's set up. So yes, you know, there's a tremendous amount of upside, but these things can't be a flash in the pan that blow up in your face, you know, 6 months later. So we're trying to build things that are going to be of value and create value for shareholders, for ourselves, and for the people who come after us.
One of the recent successes you've had, and you mentioned this a couple last week in a Twitter, and it actually, I scheduled a conversation for next week with a new director of this company. And that is Meridian Mining. You got in your members at 20 cents with a half warrant. I believe Meridian has had a stellar week. I think got up to about 38 cents today. I don't know where it's settling at right now.
Is it at 38 cents right now? Holy shit.
No, it was. I think it was.
So I checked yesterday, and it was at 30 or 31 cents. I'm going to pull it up right now.
So obviously done pretty well. I mean, if you could give us a quick synopsis of Meridian, but then because this isn't, it needs to get into how this metals rotation is taking place. If you could kind of sway the conversation that way.
All right. So I'm going to butcher this a little bit, I think, because I don't remember all the details of the numbers. We've got a lot of these things on the go, but I'll give you the broad strokes, because when I found out about Meridian, it was late last year. I want to say late November, early December. They were doing a financing at 20 cents with a warrant of some sort. And I don't remember the exact market cap at 20 cents, but I think it was something like $20 million or $25 million. And when I looked at the company, there had been like $100 million of work done on this thing. There was an old mine there. There was, you know, thousands of meters of drilling that had been done. You know, they had all the information from that. And this wasn't just drilling that had been done by anyone. This was drilling that had been done by a mining subsidiary of, I believe it was BHP, so a big oil company. Back in the day when oil and gas was making so much money that the oil companies didn't know what to do with it, so they went into mining. And, you know, these oil companies, and I kind of found this out from talking to some of my old-time geology colleagues in the course of doing due diligence for this deal, is, you know, they basically diamond-plated everything. They spent so much money on exploration, and the quality of the work was what would probably be considered overkill for the average junior explorer today. So when I was looking through this data, someone told me, and I think it's true, is that the quality of this is, you know, it's a historic resource, but the quality of the work done would likely be very, very high. And you see a company that's, you know, inheriting at least tens of millions of dollars of data, and they have a $20 million market cap, and they've got reams and reams of drill holes, that all they have to do is reprocess that data on a computer instead of go out and, you know, sink tens of millions of dollars in drilling. And then what they do is they do confirmatory drilling. So you build your historic database, you go sink a few holes around it, and you say, yep, you know, these results actually match up compared to the old data we have, and you're able to upgrade that resource relatively cheaply. So when I looked at something like Meridian, they had a good historic resource, they had upside potential, they had a very experienced team at operating in Brazil, which is not the easiest place in the world to operate, having done a little bit of that myself. So I just thought this bloody thing is cheap. You don't see assets like this come along very well. And, you know, I think we talked about this, man, I don't remember when we last chatted, but I think it was like last summer, or early last fall. And I think we talked about this, that I was very bullish on copper at the time. And I said, I thought the, see what I'm doing here? I'm swinging into the metals thing like you asked. I did think, and I'm going to take credit for this, that the shine on gold was going to come off in the medium term. And, you know, we were right. Unfortunately, we were right. And it came off a lot harder and a lot faster than I anticipated. I thought we were going to have 18 months to really build out our copper position. We started pretty aggressively and it came on really fast. Fortunately, we've got a few good names in the portfolio. I wish I had, five times that right now, frankly, but we did get started really kind of last summer building copper when no one was really interested in it.
I think I told you, Jamie, I've full-heartedly admitted on the podcast, I misplayed and misjudged this move.
Well, copper. Trevor, you should become a Resource Insider member. We have a product designed just for people like you to help make better resource investment decisions. I'm kidding. I'm being facetious, but no.
There is this rotation going on. I mean, gold and silver are in great spots. Like, don't get me wrong. Like, the midterm prospectus on precious metals, I'm not worried about. I don't lose sleep over it. But you can continue to see this rotation of trades into the base metals complex, energy complex, not only just copper. I mean, we're talking tin has started to make more news as of late because there's a supply crunch. Zinc, nickel, tungsten, I've even heard might be a possibility. More on that later next week, actually. So it's really fascinating to watch this. We talk about rotations in the equity market side, but there seems to be a rotation on the metals trade right now as well.
Yeah, and this is fairly common. Bull markets tend to start in precious and then they move into base. That's a traditional swing. But what's happening this time is, it's no longer considered the base metals trade. It's now the battery metals trade. And if you take a broad look at battery metals, that is, primarily nickel, copper, then you have lithium, there's some cobalt, and there's graphite. And all those things are attracting a tremendous amount of attention right now. And we're in an upswing for all of them right now. So I'm going to go on the record and say it'll probably start cooling off, I would think, in the next like 3 to 4 months. But, the reality is, bull markets do not go up in a straight line.
They rise and fall.
And a lot of people are stressed about, precious metals coming off right now, right? And, some of the trades that we did last fall, we sold a lot of them, but we're also down on some of them too. And you see these swings of 10, 20% at a time. And we're seeing big, successful, profitable, really impressive operators and royalty companies way, way down compared to where they should be. It boggles the mind, actually. So, this is just part of the process and something that if you kind of want to play in this market, I think you have to have the stomach to suffer the volatility. If you want to get the 2, 3, 5, 10x returns, then seeing your portfolio down by 5, 10, or 20%, that's the cost of doing business.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, so one thing I did want to ask you about, Jamie, because, and this is kind of a bigger conversation idea, is for a lot of people that listen to the podcast, they're young. They may not have that accredited investor name tag that goes along to you'll need to participate in private placements, which is what you often write about in your newsletter. So if we take a step back, and trust me, I've been there, like, It's hard not being an accredited investor and watching these opportunities arise and you can't participate in it because somebody has decided that they know what's best for you to do with your own money. But that's another conversation. if you cannot participate in a private placement, what is a strategy you might consider to get into that same, the same equity, the same company, same stock after the close of that placement?
Yeah. Well, you know, there's, I mean, I guess the simple way to put it would be, you know, pick your spot. And mm-hmm. when I say pick your spot, you really want to enter at the right time. And there are two times for me that come to mind, particularly that I would be watching. So often after closing a placement, the share price comes off right away. There's a couple of reasons for that. One, which maybe not everybody realizes, that a lot of companies market their stock very aggressively around the time of a placement. You know, they're buying online ads, they're getting out there and talking about it, they're getting newsletter writers to talk about it, they're doing all the things, frankly, that you want to see a company doing if you're already a shareholder. And, you know, they want to see that share price as high as possible during a financing because it makes that financing so much more appealing. You know, very often at Resource Insider, we invest in companies that, you know, we're getting in at half of what the share price is currently trading at. And whilst that looks like a phenomenal deal, I'm going into this understanding that, well, in a private placement, you have a 4-month hold. And even though that stock is trading at twice what you're investing right now, will it be trading at twice in 4 months right now? And normally, at least in the medium term, you do see the share price come off a bit after the financing closes. So there's often a buying window there. And guys, you know, people listening at home, I'm talking very generally here. Sometimes this happens, sometimes it doesn't. But if you are kind of on the hunt for opportunities, this is the time to do it. The other time is after that 4-month hold comes off. If the company has, I guess we should say, overpromised and underdelivered, and especially if the share price has run up aggressively since the financing. So if you come into a financing at 10 cents and then 4 months later, the thing's trading at 50 cents, most people are going to sell some stock there. You know, they're going to, you know, get a 5-time return. You're going to take half the money off the table. You're going to take some of it at least, probably, if you're prudent at all. And often that will be, you know, represent a moment of a lot of volume and a lot of liquidity for that company. And unless one, the project's really kept pace with the narrative and there's real value underpinning it, and you know, the investors can see a significant upside there, and this does happen, but not always. Or two, the company's actually done a really good job of getting the story out there and marketing and building buying in and bringing in retail to buy it. Often you'll see the share price come down at that point as well. And it might come down, you know, substantially, depending on the company and how well they've done. You know, and we had an event in one of our deals where, you know, we invested at a significant premium, which was great. It ran up even more, which was great. And then upon the 4-month hold coming off, there was a lot of selling off, and it settled near the point where we actually got in. So from our perspective, you know, we still got a warrant with that, which was one of the things we were going up. So it still makes it worth our time. And, you know, there's a lot of upside of having warrants for me, but there are still good points to enter financings at prices, if not at, then near the financing prices, if you're patient and if you're prudent and you watch these stocks and you kind of wait for your window to build a position.
Jamie, thanks so much for your time and congratulations again on the new position. We'll see what great things come from you and Mike and Craig. Really looking forward to seeing what's coming down the pipeline. And hey, buddy, you only cursed twice. Good job.
All right. Thanks a lot, Trevor.
You cursed. You potty mouth. All right. Jamie Keach, everybody from Resource Insider, now Inventa Capital. That wraps things up for today. We'll be back tomorrow morning with the morning news briefing and a couple other interviews lined up for your Thursday. Take care, everybody. Have a nice night.
The information presented should not be considered investment advice.
Mining Stock Daily and its affiliates are not responsible for any loss arising from any investment decision in connection with the material presented herein. Please do your own research or speak with a licensed financial representative before making any investment decision.